on my pillow that won't die on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Stephanie. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Okay. So let's start the meditation. Hey, everyone. Now we will do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there are bookmarks in front of you, or you can repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I have asked Michelle to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Hi, Michelle Alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all affirmation, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane mode or turn them off. And now for the fifth session in the 12 steps, we have Marion.
Oh, you said my name right. Yes. Who told her? It's kind of funky, I know. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It's good to be here, and it's good to be sober in any place in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to welcome anyone who's new here, new to the fellowship. I hope you find the hope and the love that I've found here. That's always going to be my disclaimer. And my sponsor's always been like that. Any sponsorship I've had is, you know, I still believe that, man. The newcomer is the most important person in the room. And learning how to get out of ourselves and reach out our hand to the newcomer and say, welcome, and here's my number, you know, are the moments that I can remember, and I can name those people by name today that did that for me. And I always want to be that hand, you know. In our responsibility statement, it talks about that. I might not have time for everybody that gives me a call, but I'm going to at least put your hand in the hand of somebody. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, that's how I feel. So, whoa, whew, crazy drive down from Boca tonight, two accidents in front of me. So I was a little bit shaken, and I was actually on the phone through it. and that's okay. I mean, I was on it, but I wasn't like on it distracted. I was on it and on it. Oh my God, I'm sure that made no sense. No, you get it, right? You guys get it. my friends, alcoholics. Yeah. My homies. So, and with that came up some quick prayers for the people on the road and, you know, for their safety and all that. And so I'm here and I'm safe by God's grace. And I didn't see any ambulances, so that makes me happy too. So, yay. So I made it. Back from a fresh week of my stomping grounds where I did my drinking and my drugging for, well, not drugging, dry goods. in Bellingham, Washington, I went back to see my family of origin for Thanksgiving. Yay, and after telling you the stories I told you the week before about my family that God had me tell, it was interesting, you know. And it was a bit melancholy for me, too, because, you know, November is my month where I celebrate my sobriety, and here I am back in Bellingham, and I went to my old home group, the Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they still have my name on the chalkboard, Marion W., 27 years, and that was cool, and saw some familiar faces there, and I was—I do have to confess something. It's bugged me for 2 weeks, so I kind of owe you this. I know a couple weeks ago I was talking to you about my inventory with my big sister and some pretty grave mistakes I had made in our relationship and some stuff that had happened. And I was like, oh, my God, at the end of the talk, this has bugged me for 2 weeks. I almost wanted to call Mike and have him tell you on Monday night, but— You know, all those things and all those, all that could have been overcome by just a simple phone call to my sponsor. You know, had I taken the action and taken it the right place, you know, when I'm disturbed, you know, if I'm angry, or I'm resentful, you know, I have a fabulous sponsor. Her name is Polly P., and she's, I don't know how in God's name she sponsors the amount of women she does, but she does. And she makes each and every single one of us feel like we're the only one and that we're the most special. And I love her for that. And so many times, rather than reacting out of her resentment, I've sent her a quick text or a voicemail, and she'll say something like, "You didn't say that to Peter, did you? You didn't say that to your sister, did you? You didn't say that to so-and-so, did you?" And I'll say, "No." And she'll go, "Thank God." You know? So, like, some of our troubles can be averted, you know, by practicing these principles in all our affairs. You know, and I'm going to come to you raw, and I'm going to come to you real. And, you know, part of that conversation I was having with Isabel today, you know, tonight, it was, you know, about no matter how long we're around this program, how much we need to practice these principles in all our affairs, you know. And today, my alcoholism can show up on page 52, you know, in the bedevilments. And my alcoholism can show up with, you know, with jealousy or angry or envy or fear or pride or greed or gluttony or, you know, ego, oh, ego, the original sin, you know, that's what I think anyway. And, you know, it can just show up in those ways. And it's no longer about the drink. You know, if you're new here 27 years later, it's no longer about, you know, I don't think about drinking. I don't think about taking a drug. You know, that obsession's been removed by this loving God that I seek with my whole heart. And the way I get to stay with God is by practicing these principles in my affair, all my affairs, by being accountable to my sponsor, by working these steps, and by seeking this God with the desperation of a drowning woman. And I fall short of that every day. You know, I fall short of it. You know, some days are a whole lot better. And as a result of that, I get to live a life that three words that I didn't understand, and that was to be happy, joyous, and free. You know, I'm free today. And part of the steps we're going to talk about tonight of 5, 6, and 7 are some of the steps that help set me free. And they're very, you know, I get, besides, you know, it's November, it's anniversary time. I went back home. By the way, my visit with my big sister was amazing because I cleaned up my side of the street, because I made my amends. You know, we had some time just laying on the bed and being two girls reminiscing, and it was wonderful. But had I not done, had I held that stuff inside, it had God, and I can't take any credit for God dropping that in my heart on that way to that meeting that night, you know? And if you're new, you might not understand any of this, but I had a resentment towards my sister, and God flipped that around to show me where I was at fault. And that's the only place I can find my freedom today. And then I was like, oh my gosh, you know, after, and then I felt like I was like this bloody wound wide open last week, a couple weeks ago when I shared that. I was like, oh God, why did you have me do that? I feel like, and there was a gentleman that came up to me and said, oh my God, I did the same thing to my sister. I'm going to have to do some work. And so in those situations, whether there's, you know, I always, my prayers are when I'm in the back room with Mike and the gang, and or if I'm in the restroom before I come, I get on my knees, you know, and it's just like, God, just speak to every heart. And if there's one person here that gets anything out of what I'm saying, then far out, then he used me, then God used me tonight. And so that's what I try to do, is just be free of Marion just going out of her head. And I can't, here's the deal, you know, it's like, I can't share outside of my experience. And so when I talk about step 5, 6, and 7 tonight, usually, and when I say this is, you know, melancholy, when my first time through these steps and the sacredness of that work and the sacredness of that time and what happened in my life as a result of that and how beautiful that was. And I couldn't do 5 and I couldn't do 6 and I couldn't do 7. I couldn't do 8, 9 or any of them until I did the steps that came before them. And how you know you've done the step before is when you're starting the work of the next one. You know, in step 3, it talks about it. We launch on a rigorous course of action, you know, and it was scary, you know, a searching and fearless moral inventory. My God, if you're an alcoholic, what do we know about morals? You know, I know what it's like to be immoral. And one of the things my sponsor told me too is like, you know, we're looking for the good stuff. We're going to uncover the bad stuff. We're going to get rid of this stuff that is going to uncover and help you to connect with God and the things that block me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I'm a firm believer that I cannot do these steps so I can get me sober. I can't do that. The only one that can is God. And so I do the steps. I get to do the steps and I get to do, because otherwise I'm going to take the credit again. Yeah, I did a good 4. Man, I've got it now. Or I did a good 3. Hey, way to go, Marion. And I don't know if you guys drank like me, but man, RB book talks about every form, every method, every way, swearing with or without a solemn oath. Man, switching from scotch to brandy, going to asylums, health farms, all these things, man. I meant it with my whole heart every single time, you know, and I'd be that person that, hey, Ma, ain't a grand the wind stopped blowing, and I'd be so excited, I'm going to be sober today. And by 5 o'clock that night, I would have a drink in my hand because I was just going to have one. I was just going to have a little bit. You know, and I know today, if you're an alcoholic like me, there's no such thing as that. You know, there's even true tests. There was this woman I was just hearing this message about, Marnie Mann, one of the first woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, okay, if this doesn't make your skin crawl, it is like, yuck. But she said, she used to give people this test. In the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, take 2 drinks a day for 6 months, the same exact drink, the same amount, every day for 6 months. Now, if you're like me, that just makes your skin crawl, doesn't it? You know what I mean? It just, ew, it's like, ew. So that doesn't mean go try it. If you're a real alcoholic, that probably won't work for you. And I pray to God you are. But sometimes, I don't know, if you're a hard drinker and you could do that stuff and that's wow, our hat is off to you guys. Our hat is off to you. But for me, that's not the way it is. I can't overcome my alcoholism. God can't, could, and would if he were sought. And I love this, alcoholics and God, you know? Hello? I mean, God is either everything or he's nothing. And I'm sure somebody else has probably said this. I kind of like to take credit, but maybe that'd be my pride or my ego. But I like to say either God is everything or he's nothing, or God is everywhere or he's nowhere. And I believe that in my life. I've gone to the most sordid places. You know, I've gone to Grateful Dead shows and been clean and sober and found they have yellow balloons in the middle of the concerts, and most powerful meetings I've ever been to in the midst of all that stuff. And not even the thought of drinking. And feel the power of God right in the middle of that. And I know you can go to concerts and you can go to a certain place. And I'm not suggesting doing it. And our Bible actually talks about that. That we can go to the most sordid places on earth. But it also says to be sure that we're spiritually fit when we do. You know, I traveled as a singer. I traveled with a band. The band wasn't sober. The people I was around wasn't sober. You know, it wasn't anything like that. But the thought never even occurred to me. But where was I before I went in to do those shows? Where was I before I sang? I was on my knees. It was like, God, let me be a light. And not the fog light prayer by that time, but by God, that would have worked, you know? And I had many people coming up to me, and, you know, I actually had this really, really drunk friend. And I would sit down and have a drink, and she would have a drink. And she'd say, this is my friend. She's been sober 20 years. You know, she was so proud of my sobriety, and she couldn't put it down. And one of these days, I'm kind of off on a step 12 here for a minute. But one of these days, I know she'll find these rooms. I know that. It's not my job to say, hey, you are. But to be able to say, welcome. So that's what we get to do. So I told you I did those first three steps in treatment. I started writing my fourth step. I carried it around everywhere I was. And man, I was given instruction to write down the things I was going to take to my grave, the things I wasn't going to let anybody know. You know, it wasn't the Pete Marinelli or the Mark H. style four column fears. You know, it wasn't. It was a simple inventory out of the big book that I learned back in the day 27 years ago. Since that time, my first time through the work, you know, that's evolved and that's changed and it's gotten more in depth. And I've done the 12 steps on cigarettes. I've done the 12 steps on eating. I've done, you know, there's so many ways we can apply that to our lives. And, but my first time through, I had been writing that, four step and I'd been sitting on it. And I was telling you, a couple weeks ago that I went to this wedding and my friend was getting married and I'd been resting on my laurels and I had a strange mental blank spot and there was a glass of champagne in my hand, literally in my hand. And still today, when I think of that, it petrifies me that something, you know, our big book talks about there will come a time and a place that the only thing that'll come between you and that drink is a power greater than yourself. And that came right here. And when I set that drink back down, there was a fear that came over me that I never, ever, ever, ever want to experience again as long as I live. And it was petrifying. And what it did in that moment was got me back into the work, got me back. You know, it says in our book that we may not overcome our drinking if we're not willing to do this part of the work, guys. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hated, I don't even know the word, hated, loathed me. And I can't do that in my sobriety today. I have to be able to live in my skin. I have to be okay with Marion. You know, people, my first sponsor, be like, put the bat away, man. Quit beating yourself up. You know, let's do this work. And it was beautiful. So I had this sponsor and I had this step and I had this brother that lived under a bridge, and when he didn't sleep there under the bridge, he slept in an abandoned car. And he got sober this month too. I think yesterday or day before was his anniversary, the 28th of November. And in his bottom, he came to in the back seat of an abandoned Cadillac with his socks frozen to his feet. And that brother, you know, I was getting ready to do the work. And he said to me one day, I said, yeah, I'm going to do my fifth step. And he said to me, and this is homage to one of my all-time heroes. And it was this precious pastor named Ron Slater. And to you guys, it might not mean anything, but to me, he meant the world. When my first husband and I got married, I was 19 years old and pregnant, and he was there. And he married us, and he we went to his church, and he handed candies to my kids, and he was this big, and he would sing with this robust voice all these beautiful hymns, and I just adored this man, you know, and he was never shoving God down my throat, ever. And he never did that with anyone. He was just love. He just exuded love. And when my son passed away, the day I was at the hospital, he showed up there. I have no idea. I walked around a corner and he was there. And I don't even have the words. And he walked my husband and I through all of that. And, you know, made arrangements for the funeral, and he was just there in my life. And that same year when my mom passed on, he was there. He was just there. And so my brother, in his infinite wisdom, Cadillac heroin addict, abandoned heroin addict, said to me, you know, I think you should do your fifth step with Ron Slater. And there was this in my outside my hometown, Linden, Washington. This little Dutch town. There's this big mansion out there. Not a lot of mansions where I come from. But there's this big mansion, and it was originally owned by Randy Bachman of BTO. That's Bachman Turner Overdrive. If you guys don't know, and you're too young, look up some of their music. Some of the greatest rock and roll you'll ever hear. Right? Good stuff. And that made us really cool because Randy Bachman lived where we lived. But Randy had moved away, and he sold this house, and they turned it into a treatment center. And Ron Slater would go there, and he would listen to Fifth Steps, and he listened to a lot of Fifth Steps. And so I knew that I wanted to talk to him. And I'd made this arrangement. He was going to come to my house, and he was going to come at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he's going to hear my fifth step. And that morning, you know, back in the day, 1990, I guess, at that time. Back then, Isabel maybe did, other old timers in the room. I used to collect a whole lot of phone numbers from a whole lot of people. Some reason that sponsor I had at that time scared the crap out of me, and I was not telling her that stuff. And I had all these phone numbers written on little pieces of paper on my dresser. And it's about 8 o'clock that morning. And I was like, there is no way I am telling this man this stuff. It is not going to happen. And I picked up the phone and I started calling every phone number that I could find. Every single number. Because I got to get somebody before this guy gets here. And I started calling numbers. Nobody answered, like good alcoholics. No. The hand of AA, what's this horse? Crap. You know, and nobody answered the phone. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And he showed up at my house. And I was, oh my God, I was petrified. I was absolutely humiliated, petrified. All that our big book talks about, all the dark crannies of our past, man, it was there and it was on paper. And I'm going to tell this man that, to me, walked on water. He did. I loved him. I adored him. And what he thought of me meant the world, you know? And we sat down and we started the work. And as I poured through the pages, I sobbed. And it was, I can tell you, I can almost feel that today because it was the most cleansing thing I've ever done in my life, most cleansing thing I've ever done. And I sat there and I poured through the pages and, you know, revealed, like our book talks about, all these old skeletons in my closet, my fears, my sex, my all these things. And I just poured it all out to him. And I sobbed through those pages. And the first thing he said to me when I lifted up my head, the very first thing he said, "Were you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore? I love you. Good job." Sent me off for my hour. Sent me, wrote down my considerations for my step 6 and 7. You know, here's your defects of character. Here's your fear. Here's your selfishness. Here's your dishonesty. And sent me away for that hour. Now, I don't know if you've ever done the work of a fifth step. It's the only place in the book that it talks about that. The most sacred hour we take in Alcoholics Anonymous is that sacred hour where we're quiet, where we're with God, where we're taking that time just between him and I. You know, Ron stayed at my house. He had coffee in the living room. I went in the other room and he stayed there. And he did that seventh step prayer with me that day. I can tell you, no, I don't read the 12 and 12 a whole lot, but one of the biggest things it says in step 6 and 7, and I don't even know if it's in 7 or if it's in 6, shows you how much I read that because I usually stick to this book. But it talks about 6 and 7 being the steps that separate the men from the boys. And I love that. We pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of our past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. These are promises of the fifth step. We're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. You know, that day, I did meet with my sponsor after I was done with Ron, and we met at a restaurant in downtown Bellingham. And some people have profound experiences with step 5. I had a profound experience. And what happened for me was I felt like the woman that I was and the woman I was to become were two totally different people. And I experienced these fifth step promises that day. We may have had a certain spiritual belief. I told you I found God a year before that, year and a half before that. But now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And that comes before returning home in the quiet hour, but I just wanted to share those fifth step promises with you. When we get into step 6, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing. And I was feeling so clean, and I'm going to get these character defects removed. Then I was afraid I was going to become like Mother Teresa, and I was going to be boring, and I was going to be like glowing in the dark, and, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, I was scared of that stuff. Now I'm going to be, you know, like those... Am I to be boring and glum like the book talks about? Like those righteous people I see? Because I was always comparing my insides to other people's glowy outsides. You know? When I felt like such crud inside of me. Oh, Sorry about my nose again. Good heavens, I cry and my nose runs. When ready, we say something like this. And this is something I live by today. And I use a third step and I use a seventh step, hand in hand, because, you know, there's not a whole lot written about six and seven in our big book. There's only a couple paragraphs. But I can tell you the profoundness of that to me today is like, you know, it's not like I can just go, hey, I'm working on the character defect of jealousy today. I'm not going to be jealous. I'm not going to be jealous. Or I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to be afraid. It's like I can't swear off my character defects any more than I could swear off booze. I couldn't do that, guys. So, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. And that first part always reminds me that, you know, I can think that some of my, all of me, good and bad, what I've decided is good about me, what I think is pretty good about me, I'm leaving that decision to God. Maybe God doesn't think what I think is good in me is good. And maybe what I think, and on the other hand, guys, maybe what I think is bad in me isn't bad. You know, I'm a sensitive alcoholic. I'm a pretty sensitive alcoholic. And I think I carry, by God's grace, I'm an empath. And I know that sometimes in that we can look at as a character defect, often God can use it where I can walk in a room and I can look at somebody in the eye and I can say, just the same way people did for me, how you doing, Marion? I'm fine. And they would say, BS. You know? So some of those defects can end up being, you know, something God can use someday. You know, some of it, I don't know what's good and I don't know what's bad, but God certainly does. You know, if I'm afraid, maybe there's a moment I'm supposed to be afraid in that moment. Maybe I'm supposed to, oh, thank you. I'm going to blow it. Okay, sometimes there's such thing, guys, as healthy fear. You know, if I'm in a cruddy neighborhood at a cruddy moment and that comes over me and it's telling me to go, then maybe I need to listen to that, you know? So I don't know. That's not straight out of the big book, but that's kind of, I've been around here a long, long time, like longer than some of you have been alive. So listen to that. No. You know, that gut, that intuition, that place inside of us that says, this is wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I don't need that third Red Bull this morning. I'm already got a little bit of anxiety. Maybe that little voice might be something you want to listen to. You know, maybe I do want to get off the phone now when I'm driving through two car wrecks. You know, things like that. And so I've learned to, as a result of these steps, as a result of seeking this God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, I've learned to listen to that voice and be able to, you know, be more aware of those things. And, you know, our seventh step, guys, becomes our first step for life. It's how I'm going to show up to the world. It's how I'm going to show up to you. It's a direct result, and it's a direct reflection of who God is in me. Because if I'm running on all these character defects, you know, this seventh step prayer, you know what else it says? At the very bottom, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Our big book talks about, I cannot transmit something I don't have. Is it transmit? Is that the right word? I hope so. Yeah, got it. Thanks, Crunch Monkeys. Way to go, boys. But if I'm busy in my character defects, if I'm living inside of my character defects, and I'm, you know, Miss Self-Righteous, coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with my big 27 years of sobriety, and I'm acting out of these places of my character defects. And my first step for life, as I go out to do your bidding, God. Okay, in... So I'm working for God in step three, right? In step three, you know, he's the principal... He's a principal and we're the agent, right? Is that how it goes? All right. Trying here. Okay. So if I'm going out and I'm working for God and I walk out of this room right now and I go down to the local Floridian diner and I cheat the waitress out of a tip. If somebody goes honking by me and I'm flipping them the birds, and I'm like, I'm just telling you. I'm telling you, I take this work, you know, I take it pretty serious. And I'm going to always fall short. But I want to be an example. If I'm working for God and that's what God's done in my life, so graciously saved a wretch like me out of the closet with the door closed, with the blinds closed, with the cops outside looking in through the blinds and through the door to find me. If he's taken me from that place, from that scrap heap that Peter talks about, if he's taken me from that to this, you know, my life is not mine. My life is not my business. And I say this to people a lot. If you want to know how to stay sober and you want to stay sober, I better be willing that you follow me around. I better be willing that you could get on the passenger side of my car. I better be willing that when I go to any AA meeting, you see me. You know, I talked about that a couple weeks ago, that I was standing in this mail line in Bellingham. And I think I said it here. I don't know. Maybe I didn't. And you know, I'm in a super duper really crappy mood, you know, and I've got to wait in line and I didn't want to, and it was just yuck coming off of me. And this gentleman says to me, "Hey, you're Marion Weston, aren't you?" And I'm like, within an instant, I was like, wow, how sober are you right this minute, Marion? And it turned me around, you know, and I just said, you know, I'm really sorry. I had a really cruddy attitude. You know, it's Christmas time and there's a line and I got here late. I think it's the post office's fault and everybody in the line, you know, because I got there late. Probably not. You know, so the seventh step becomes our first step for life. It's one thing to take our third step prayer and to own our third step prayer, but to own our seventh step prayer is what separates the men from the boys. And what separates the women from the girls. And I want to be that light. And I want to be that attractive to women coming in the program. I want to treat the men in this place. Whether if they're my age, they're my brother. And if they're younger, they're my kid. You know? And I want to treat people the way I want to be treated. Okay? And I want to be that light and I want to be that example. And I can't do that except for by the grace of God. So I can't. And I can practice this prayer. And I can practice it in all my affairs. Where else was I going to go? There comes a time and a place when we've been around her long enough. And I've said this at many meetings, you know, old timers consider and die in the rooms because we forget, like we can forget to keep reaching out to our sponsor. We can not go through the steps again. And There's a beautiful prayer called the Lay Aside Prayer, where I can lay aside everything I think I know about this book and about you, God, and for a new experience and a fresh experience. And oftentimes, as old timers, we can sit in these rooms and we can talk about the good old days when we got sober. But where am I currently? Where am I today? You know, I work in the treatment center business, and it can be all consuming and it can be tiring. And it can be like, oh, God, I worked with alcoholics all day long. Do you know how many sponsee phone calls I took today? You know when the last time I talked to my sponsor? Yesterday. Not today, but yesterday. I did my inventory last night. And I'm not taking any credit, guys. I'm telling you because this is where God keeps me. And I believe that God keeps me there because this is exactly what I need for my sobriety today. This is what I need to stay sober today. See, I can't rely on 27 years ago I took my last drink. I can't, you know, think it through and remember the drink. I do remember. God's made me very conscious of that. But that's not what's going to keep me sober. What's going to keep me sober is being desperate, seeking this relationship with God, and doing this work that continues to keep me seeking this God. With desperation of a drowning woman. So I think I'm done again. So thank you so much.
Okay, one more time for Marion. The Secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Tyler to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Yeah, three claps.
I'm Tyler. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from the fourth to the second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Does anyone need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. If you could just please stand up. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please link up with him after the meeting and take him through these steps? I have a quick announcement. We have the Winterfest Dinner and Ice Cream Social. It's Saturday, December 3rd, 2016. 6 p.m. dinner, 8 p.m. speaker, live holiday carols. Before, if you want to buy the ticket, it's $8, and at the door, it's $10. If Robert can please raise his hand, he has the tickets. He's all the way in the back over there. Robert. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night meeting, Big Book Study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer, and after the prayer, oh, never mind. Our Father. See you on Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you smile. When you smile. The whole smiles with you. Yes, when you laughing. When you laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying,
and everybody watch the
picture, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby, and I hope.
Monday night. We'll be here to sign up. That's how we came to the website.